Welcome to the Deadite Bites podcast. We are covering the Starz Channel series, Ash vs. Evil Dead. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Paul.
Today we are covering Season 1, Episode 2, entitled Bait. This one was directed by Michael J. Bassett, written by Dominic Dierkes, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, and created by Sam Raimi, Ivan Raimi, and Tom Spezier. I'm not really sure about the pronunciation of that one either. Those guys are the three creators, and they actually wrote the first episode, but they're just listed in credits as creators on this one. The writing was done by this Dominic Dierkes guy. Do we want to talk about reactions at all, or do you want to just go straight into recap?
I always like the reactions personally, but that's up to y'all.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's do it.
You want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't like this episode as much as the pilot. Of course, the pilot sets a very high bar. They really propelled the story forward. So I'm hoping now that we've got a lot of things dealt with, like Kelly's parents and things like that, that we're really going to get to the meat of the story. We've now established relationships between characters. We've got this trio who are going to be out fighting and whatnot. So, and I think I just have to change gears because all the shows we cover, there's not as much humor. I don't think it's, like, you know, and if there's any humor, it's usually in Twin Peaks and it's more of a quirky style. So, you know, I just have to change my gears a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it. I think it's fucking hilarious. I mean, yeah, I see what you're saying about, you know, now we've got everything ready to rumble, but I mean, yeah, the first one, I didn't know what to expect, so you had that surprise factor to it. And this one, I was kind of expecting the jokes, and I mean, the amount of blood and gore and everything else was just wonderful. I thought it was great.
I thought if the last one was off the charts, you know, if we had like a scale of 1 to 10 and the last one was a solid 11, I would put this one at probably like 8.5 or 9. It's a step down from last one, but I wasn't disappointed at all because kind of coming from where Em's coming from, I see it as a necessity episode. You have to establish the relationships between the characters. You have to get some certain things out of the way, like the fact that the Deadites can change form and try to fool certain people. And all of these things that the audience already knows, but the characters have to kind of get to know. So now it's like you get this baseball bat or shotgun blast, however you want to put it, to the face in the first episode. Then they pull back a little bit and kind of lay down the groundwork. Here's the rules. Here's how this is going to work. Here's the dynamic between these three people as a unit. Here's some facts and figures about what goes on in the Deadite world. And now we're ready to go. So it's kind of like packing for a trip, I guess, is the best way you can, you know, see this episode. But I wasn't disappointed in it at all. I mean, it was a step down in intensity in pretty much every category from the first episode, but that's going to be expected because you got to realize that the creators wrote the first episode, and now that writing is being handed to other people. So if some of Ash's jokes fall a little bit flat, it's because over the 30 years that this character's been in existence, those, you know, two, or at least that one person, Sam Raimi, has always had a hand in what he says, and those other two people have been close to him. So it's, now it's kind of, the reins are being passed on to other people. So it's going to be a little bit bumpy at first until people probably find their stride. And, you know, and it's not like Sam Raimi is, I don't think he's a absentee owner or anything like that. It's, I still think he has a lot of input on what goes on. So I don't think he's going to let it get too far afield. It's definitely 30 minutes of time well spent no matter what. And the blood flow is awesome in this one.
Yeah.
Man, tons.
It cannot be – if you can fault it for other things, you cannot fault it for that. But I all in all, I have to say I still loved it. I was still giddy with excitement, and I felt like you could kind of interpret Ash as hitting some flat notes, but I thought he still hit a lot of good ones. So
absolutely.
All right, let's start with the recap. All right, well, we open up the scene exactly where we left off with Vivian's head on the floor. And this is a good exposition scene where Ash is letting Kelly know that these things are called Deadites, and she's kind of commenting on how good he is at killing them, and he has a good quote in here about how, well, I'd say it's a gift from God, but I don't want to give the man upstairs too much credit. So Kelly and Pablo then try in vain to get Ash to take a detour to her dad's house before he goes to this bookseller to try to get the Necronomicon translated, and what does he say? Push the undo button on this thing forever. but he's not having it. And I mean, I can see it both ways. This girl wants to go save her dad because she's pretty sure that that was a Deadite that came in the front door. But he's like, look, there's bigger things at stake here. So she drives off on the motorcycle as he's chaining, you know, he's kind of battening down the hatches on the streamline.
Mr. Roper almost jumps out and gets...
Yeah, and you've got the deadite Mr. Roper in the background, which I thought was a nice touch that he didn't come out right at that time, because the deadites have always been kind of like humorously sneaky in a way, and then they get just like totally in your face. So it's kind of like a two sides to a coin there. Anything on that?
You're probably about to get to it about how Pablo tells him that she ran off with the book.
Yeah, Pablo comes out and says that, she drives off on the bike. Right. And you can see it. And that's Mr. Roper was about to make his attack at that point. And then she drives off on the bike. And so he gets distracted and kind of hides again. And as we know, he went into the trailer. And Pablo comes out and lies to Ash and says that she took the book to get him to go to her dad's house. Which is pretty
smart.
It's pretty smart. Yeah, it's pretty slick.
Which
it was
we
a good
see,
idea.
We kind of see something later where it's not so overt, but Pablo seems to have this skill where he either manipulates or opportunizes on situations. And so is this like some sort of like attribute like you could roll for if you were like playing D&D or something? What would you call it?
Oh, absolutely.
It? So, and I think this is going to show up again later.
Convincing.
This is how he gets things to go his way. And and I don't know how involved Kelly was in this. If he said, hey, go, go, go. I'm going to tell him you have the book. We'll be there to follow. We'll help you out.
Yeah.
You know?
I think she just split.
I think so, too.
She was surprised that they were even at her house. You know, like, what the fuck?
That's true.
I think it was an opportunistic thing on Pablo's part. They split, and he said, all right, I'm going to get Ash to go because I'm going to say that she took the book, and he just puts it in his satchel kind of thing.
He did it really quickly.
I think you're right, though. I think that's a survival mechanism that he has because he's not this, like, tall, handsome, confident guy who exudes this. Because some people get you to do things that they want you to do just by force of personality. Other people have to be a little bit manipulative.
Well, I mean, look how Ash treats him. He treats him like a trash can. He's just throwing his beer bottles at his feet in the car, you know? Which
yeah,
proves
yeah.
to be useful later, and he does opportunize that situation.
Right.
But still.
So, you know, we could just say that Ash is being an asshole, or we could say that Pablo's been treated like this his whole life. And not to dig too deep into it, because we really don't know how much insight there is to be gleaned here, but he, you know, we're used to doing that on this podcast, so we're going to do it. But it could be his survival mechanism. That's how he's always gotten people to do, you know, kind of push them along the path that he needs them to be on.
Yeah, it's kind of like Ash's moral compass, because it's a good move on Ash's part to go and save this girl, you know,
yeah.
It's kind
yeah.
of his fault that she's in trouble, you know?
That's an excellent way to view it. He is the moral compass. Mm-hmm.
Pablo
that's
is
a good
his moral
point.
Compass.
Yeah, you're right, Paul. Yeah. That's a good point. Because this whole series is kind of built on the fact that Ash isn't going to do this alone anymore. He's not just going to be like surrounded by people at the beginning of the movie who are then dead at the end of the movie. It's going to be constant
exactly.
companions, and there has to be they all have to serve a purpose, and that's Pablo's purpose. He's going to be that moral compass.
And that's Ooh. Been established that he needs a moral compass. So.
Yes, very much. Very much. So, you know, he tells – there's a great quote here that had me laughing. It's the first funny thing, really, that happens in the episode when Pablo's like, I tried to talk to her, but she didn't listen to me. And he's like, you know, this is not a very PC thing to say these days, but chicks are like that.
Oh, man.
So Pablo pretty much convinces Ash that this is the only way to get the Necronomicon. And Ash, whether he likes it or not, has, you know, there's no other recourse for it. So he's got to go with them to go get it. And so they hop in the car and they're driving down the road. And you know, if Pablo's looking up to him, I mean, like at this, like Emmett pointed out, he's throwing his beer cans at his feet and everything, drinking and driving. You know, just driving down the road, blasting 70s rock and everything. And he's kind of looking up to him and being like, wow, how do you do that? You know, he's like, well, once you get hit in the face once, you know, it just gets your nut up to rumble.
And you just instantly know what to do.
Yeah, you just know what to do. Which I haven't been in very many physical altercations in my life, but I would imagine like it's probably something similar to that. If you get socked in the face one good time, you either decide I'm going to curl up in a ball and this is it, or else you're just like, all right, let's go.
Surge of anger.
Yeah, you know, you just go into a reaction mode. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's it. I've been into a few fights and you don't really think as much. At least I don't.
Yeah.
It just turns into, like you said, it's just a gut reaction to what kind of situation you're in.
I just one of the fights that I remember as a kid, the guy hit me in the face, and I remember thinking, that didn't hurt as much as I always thought it would. So then you could keep going and keep going back and forth, so it lets you...
Well, your adrenaline kicks in, too, you know, so you don't feel you don't feel as much of the pain until afterwards when it all wears off.
Yeah, and then you're absolutely. Oh.
If you guys want to hear about a fight that happened in a public restroom between Paul and somebody else, refer to our Spartacus podcast. I'm pretty sure it's in our early seasons.
Yeah.
I think it was. It wasn't very fun.
We've actually covered this subject in great detail before, but I'm making the jump off the cliff assumption that a lot of our listeners for this podcast are not Spartacus listeners. So it's there for you to hear, though, if you'd like to.
Some of them probably follow all of Tapper and Raimi.
No, that's true. Yeah. So during a discussion about fighting Deadites, Roper appears in the back seat, and I thought this was great because he looks in the rear view and there he is in that awesome makeup with the white eyes and everything. And they just start going at it. And one of the things that I really liked about this episode in particular, because it happens a couple of times, the Deadites have always been snarky and they say stuff that tries to get at you by, you know, pretending to be okay and then, you know, pretending to be somebody that you love. But here they're exhibiting almost like psychological warfare. You know, because Mr. Roper's telling him, what did he say? He's like, you sad old failure. You'll never defeat evil and this and that. And it's just it's a cool thing that's going on. Like they're trying to get under people's skin. So it's not just popping up and be like, I'll swallow your soul.
So if Roper, Ash, and that girl are all like out doing stuff, who's minding the store?
Yeah, nobody's there.
Deadites.
Deadites. Right? Right? Yeah.
Deadite Mart.
They're claiming territory left and right.
So they go at it, and you know, they're fighting, and Ash is in a pretty compromised position because he's kind of pinned down by Roper in the back of the car, and he's biting on his fake hand and everything, and he's pretty much telling Pablo, like, hey, help out, do something. And so Pablo thinks it's a good idea to just smash this Deadite in the head with a completely intact bottle of beer, and it just does nothing but make him smile. So he gets punched in the face, and it doesn't really make him start to see everything any more clearly.
Oh, he's saying, I don't know what to do. I got punched in the face, and I still don't know what to do.
Oh, and this the whole situation that they're in, you know, going 60 miles an hour down the road.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty funny.
With the Airstream and, you know, attached to the back.
Oh, absolutely.
With some near misses by speeding cars and... So finally, Ash gets a hold of a broken beer bottle and just starts gouging Roper in the neck. And
oh, man.
I thought he was going to decapitate him with it. I was like, is this really happening? Oh, my God.
Yeah, that would have been badass. But I think what they did was just as badass. But apparently, I saw a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff, and that blood, that fake blood, was getting into Bruce Campbell's mouth, and he was, like, choking on it. And it was getting in his eyes.
I didn't notice that.
He was gagging. He wasn't choking. He was like gagging. I guess it was probably between takes. He was just, it was so disgusting. And in his mouth and down in his throat. And it got in his eyes and he couldn't see everything. Mm-hmm. So they were really getting into the scene. But once again, you know, I don't know how much Sam Raimi had to do with this particular episode, but he's known for just, you know, pouring it on. So whoever was doing that, you know, the director in this case was probably just going, well, I'm going to carry on that tradition and just put you through all kinds of hell. And this is when he says, you're never going to defeat evil. And Ash says, thanks for the heads up. And then just smashes his head out the window. The oncoming car hits him. And then we get the titles.
Which I love how they do the title.
With the splattered blood. You say it reminds you of Spartacus.
Reminds me of Spartacus. Also reminds me of Quentin Tarantino, which is doing homage to, like, I guess the grindhouse style features and stuff like that. So
just a completely
over
the top.
I'm sure they're all paying homages to.
So as they're driving away from this, Ash is cleaning himself up and letting Pablo know, you know, this isn't my first rodeo. I've done this kind of thing before. Pablo's like, you got another towel? So he's like, oh, here we go. And he hands him a wet nap.
Oh, I know.
At least it's wet.
Covered.
It's not a belly laugh, but it's a dry chuckle. So
at least it's wet maybe lemon scented.
Maybe, yeah. At least you could get it out of your eyes.
Or just around your nasal area. Just take care of that spot so you're not smelling Deadite blood.
Yeah, that's one of the things that the whole Evil Dead franchise has never really addressed. That if, like, the Deadites have to, like, intentionally try to infect you because if blood just, if they bite you or something, but if blood gets in your mouth, you're okay because Ash has had to swallow a couple of gallons of blood by this point. All right, so next scene we have Special Agent Fisher. She shows up at the trailer park and talks to Ash's neighbors who are, they don't remember his name, but the guy says, He brings home whores sometimes.
I know. And the trailer park's name was Mossy Heaven, which I thought was kind of funny.
Mossy Heaven. So they determine that he brings whores back to the trailer park, and the wife of the couple that she's talking to says that one of those tramps had a tattoo on her wrist, and that probably wasn't the only place she had a tattoo. So, more importantly, Fisher sees a dismembered hand pointing, and it's pointing to the card from mm-hmm. Books from Beyond. So she picks that up, and now she's going to be on Ash's trail sooner or later.
So, were those there, was it these neighbors couldn't see those things, or were they actually physically there? Because Amanda sees things sometimes. So I'm calling it Deadite's sight because Ash has it at the dinner table later. But so is it the Deadites leading her, or is it something else?
It's a good question. There is a crime scene here because in a later scene you see the other cop tell Agent Fisher to leave because mm-hmm. she's under investigation. She can't be there, and she does leave, and it is at the trailer park.
Yeah, knowing Ash, he probably just threw the dead bodies out and drove off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't. Why bother carrying those things around?
Yeah. He didn't do any cleanup.
I like the Deadite site idea. I think it's good. So maybe somehow when the Deadites told her in the first episode that they knew who she was, you know, she's got something that happened to her in her past, or maybe her parents or something to give her, you know, the Deadite site, which is genius.
Something that's happened behind the scenes that we don't know about yet as the audience mm-hmm. ties her to this whole thing. So
exactly.
That's, yeah. So I'm going to go with the Deadite site. I like that.
Well, yeah, but do you think it's the Deadites that are telling her to go to this particular book place? Is it advantageous for them?
That's an even better question.
Because the finger was pointing toward the card.
Maybe because they know that there's more of a chance, like the more people that get involved, the more chance there is for something to fuck up and have it go their way. Because nothing good ever happens when somebody grabs that book. So the more people that they can have hands on it, probably the better. So they could be trying to lead her to her death, too.
Yeah, I was hoping for more of her backstory this episode.
Yeah, she was almost there in the few scenes she's in just to remind you that she's still there. Because mm-hmm. we didn't get Lucy Lawless as Ruby at all this episode.
No, exactly. So,
El Jefe and Pablo, after they have a little conference about their battle strategy and their plan of attack, they bust into Kelly's parents' house only to see what appears to be a happy family. Just sitting around. Kelly looks like she just got out of the shower cleaning up all the blood off of her and everything. And everything is just kind of hunky-dory.
Which is weird because they ask Ash and Pablo why they are covered in blood. I mean, did Kelly sneak in to clean off her blood and just show up downstairs in a robe like, hey, Mom, Dad, hey, what's up?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
But I'm nitpicking, so.
Well, maybe she went. She could have stopped on the way there, too, like right before she went in at like a gas station or something and just kind of rinsed off maybe or a hose. I don't know. That's a good question.
She didn't do a very good job because she did still have some blood. I know.
But she was in a robe, so the clothes that she had before were, covered in blood. So, I mean, she did something with those. I'm sure she didn't show up to her parents' house naked. So that's a good point. I mean, you might think you're being nitpicky, but I mean, it is a really good point.
No, absolutely.
So a little bit of awkwardness ensues, and the reason that Ash and Pablo give for them being covered in blood is that they hit a deer rather in their grill, and as they pulled it off, it exploded.
I like the dad's answer to that, to where he's like, "Well, I hunt, and I've never had a deer explode."
Well, maybe you're hunting the wrong deer.
Yeah. Did you milk the deer too, Greg? That's what it felt like, oh, shit.
So here we have Mimi Rogers as a guest star role playing Kelly's mom. And apparently she was all in on this. And the guys are saying, the crew, the production crew and everything are saying that she really set the bar high for all the guest stars that were to come. Because apparently she works out every day and she wanted to do as much of her own stunts as she could. And she was like, cover me in blood. Let's do this. I'm 100% in. Which really helps out because I haven't seen her in a whole lot of stuff, but I'm aware of her as an actress, and I wouldn't have pegged her as somebody who would have done something like this necessarily and been that gung-ho for it. But you never know. People surprise you. So I don't know if you guys noticed this, but as, you know, Ash is skeptical the whole time, and as she's standing there, Kelly's mom, and talking to him, there's flies buzzing around her head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
did you catch that? That was the mm-hmm. first, because at first I was thinking, well, maybe there's just like other magic that's happening outside of like the Deadite resurgence. So this could be, you know, a part of that. And then I saw the flies and I was like, no, she's one of them. So he even asked her, he's just like, oh, so you used to be dead, right?
I know. Ash doesn't hold back at all.
So now they decide that they're going to have dinner and they go out to the trailer and everything. And we cut to another scene where Fisher, she gets a hold of a police sketch giving her a visual of Ash, who apparently looks way dumber in real life, as we hear somebody say. So the humor's not as on point as it was in the first episode, but I mean, it's making us laugh now just thinking about it, so yeah. It's not that bad.
Well, it had some funny parts for sure.
Then she's Fisher's chased off by another officer, like I had mentioned earlier, because she's part of an ongoing investigation, so she really can't be there and she shouldn't be there. So she's like, all right, I'm out of here. So as one thing I'd like to mention, I don't think I mentioned before, is the windmill in front of Kelly's parents' house that mm-hmm. starts going, which is like a callback to the windmill in Army of Darkness.
Right.
So yes. Letting you know, Army of Darkness did happen. Even though it's a little thing, it did happen.
Well, the Deadites love their windmills. They spin, you know.
They're like little dreidel toys for them. Oh, look at the spinny windmill. I'm going to swallow its soul. So getting cleaned up in the Streamline trailer, Pablo admits that he took the book to get help for Kelly. And right before that, though, Ash pulls a little piece of Deadite flesh out of his hair, probably Roper's, obviously, and feeds it to his lizard.
Yeah, that was nasty.
That poor lizard. Ugh, eating possessed flesh.
Well, I mean, hey, he's getting fed.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, a gust of wind opens up the door. There's a Pablo comforts himself by saying, it's just a storm, Pabito, which is when he quoted his uncle shaman, right? From last episode, he referred to him calling himself Pabito, which I know is a term of endearment that your elders give to children, but could it possibly be he's carrying around his shaman uncle or something? There's got to be more to this whole shaman thing. And Pablo's going to, you know, eventually, I think we're supposed to be reminded of this shaman uncle.
Yeah.
But.
And the entire time in this scene, he's trying to convince Ash that, hey, you know, everything's fine, dude. Just relax. Let's go in because I have a shot at this girl. You know, so let's be cool. It's the first time I get to meet her parents.
Well, this scene also serves to have some exposition for not just for Pablo, but for the audience who probably maybe hasn't seen all the movies and doesn't understand how the Deadite schematic works. And Ash lets him know that, like, look, this is what's going on. I'm the big fish that they're trying to catch with the little fish. That's Kelly. She's the bait. And Deadites can take on whatever form they want. They can pretend to be a normal, living, breathing human being. So go from there. So, you know, like we said earlier, this episode has a lot of those little bits of exposition to let us know where we're at and what's going on. So hopefully after this episode, we just kind of switch up back up to the gear right around the first episode and, and just kind of.
Yeah, realizing that helps smooth over the rough patches a little.
So he says, yeah, like Paul was saying, you know, I'm trying to get with this girl and now I'm just meeting her mom. So be cool. And he's like, oh, I'll be polite right up until I'm not.
Well, this is also where he tells him he took the book, right?
Yes. He admits that he took the book. And Ash is pissed off for a second, but then he realizes, all right, well, you're doing it to try. Because I think Ash can kind of sympathize with him trying to hook up with a girl. And he's like, all right, well, I do have to go save the whole world, but I see what you're doing here. All right. You're good.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ash did it in the first two movies, you know, protect the girls in the cabin, so. And in the third movie. He can't be Mr. Big Bad Guy the entire time.
So they go back into the house, and dinner's being served. Roast beef, medium rare, which looks absolutely disgusting. Yeah. It looks like it's just, like, just raw dripping on the vegetables, and Well, I thought it was significant that the doctor said that she suffered amnesia, but her memory is coming back in pieces. Because it's just like how she's going to go out.
In pieces.
Wah, wah, wah. So he starts asking her a bunch of questions to kind of test to see if she's really a human being. And they're going back really fast. So I thought this was a pretty neat scene. And she's a school teacher, 10th grade, and her favorite book is The Old Man and the Sea about fishing. And then, you know, the dad pipes up and he's like, I like fishing.
Didn't he tell him to shut the fuck up?
He's like, this is not about you, Pops. We're moving on. Or I don't know what he said. Something like that.
So this is where the show really shows its genius, because they have this back and forth and you're just like, okay, all right, well, why would a Deadite be doing this? How would they be able to hold out that long? Because they never have before. And then you're like, all right, everybody can just kind of calm down, eat dinner. You know, Pablo's like, look, man, I'm right. You're wrong. Just chill out. So he's like, okay, okay. And then he just cleans her clock with a left out of nowhere.
And, well, the reason why he does is because the electricity dims out for a second, and then there is more flies, and there's something. He sees the blood come out of her mouth. He gets gets the Deadite sight, and he just established with Pablo, was it before this, that things get weird around the Deadite, so
they
he knows
do.
This.
Yeah,
this is why he knew he could punch her in the face, and he was correct to do so. So that's why he did it.
Yeah, that was the signal for us, but I think he was going to punch her the whole time, regardless.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
he wanted I mean... to, but it, that is right. You know, the flickering lights and the return of the flies and everything.
Return of the flies.
I was going to see if anybody got that. Right? I was going to let you guys handle that. But so she gets up, and then she dispatches her husband in a pretty horribly awesome fashion. Just put a fork on a table and slam somebody's head into it.
Oh, my
it's
God.
So much more visually effective than if she just would have stuck the fork in his eye.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I mean, she jams it past the socket. You know, it's a finishing move.
He deserved it. She gets punched in the face, and he has a very insipid response about his wife getting punched.
Oh, I know.
It was so lame. So lame. Even, I mean, Kelly's was a little bit better. I mean, she actually got up and started, doing her little limp-wristed slaps on his chest.
Yeah.
But still, if your mom gets punched, how are you going to react? You're going to react.
It would be someone's ass.
It would be way strong. You're not going to stop mid-sentence, and there's going to be like a five-minute pause before your head gets slammed into a fork.
I mean, how
you're definitely going to beat some ass.
How would you react if your wife got punched like that? If somebody was at your house.
Same reaction.
Exactly.
I'm beating someone's ass for sure.
Ash gets his chainsaw and he's ready to go, but then the mom starts to crawl all along the wall, just jumping up. And this is where we get that blend of the newer horror stuff in here, but it works because it's not that jerky stop motion kind of stuff that you see in these horror films that are kind of inspired by Japanese horror films. It's just straight shots. She's on the wall. They do the tricks and everything. They speed it up and whatnot, but it's not that herky jerky stuff that I just can't stand. And so he fires a couple of rounds. Then he has to reload, and she's gone. And Kelly's gone, too. And apparently she went up to her room, and the mom is up there hiding out, so she beat her to the room somehow. But, I mean, if you're a Deadite, it's probably a pretty easy task.
And singing a lullaby, which is callback.
Yeah, I was going to say that. The Hush Little Baby Don't Say a Word lullaby callback from...
the first one, right?
It's actually the second one.
It's because, the second one.
Yeah, because Henrietta is... when she's in the mom mode and not...
That's right. She's under the...
Yeah. She's trying to be human when she's not Ted Raimi.
Yeah.
And she's singing the Hush Little Baby. And then Sarah Barry's character sings it back to her to get her to calm down so Ash can chop off her head. So we get a nice little callback and we get some more of that psychological warfare I was talking about earlier where, the guys jump in and she's still in human form and they're like, this is where Ash says... Daddy didn't excuse you from dinner, or father didn't excuse you
from
dinner.
That's what it was.
I hated that. That was the worst joke in the whole thing, because here's this person's dad was just killed downstairs, and you come up and you use him in a joke like that?
Well, here's the thing, though, right? You got to think of what Ash has been through. He's seen his friends and his girlfriend die. He's been in a huge
30
war
years ago.
And battle. It still happened, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think after he left the cabin and came back from, 1500s, it's kind of like a veteran coming back from a couple tours in war. You've seen so much, and he's back in the fight. I think it's more of he just doesn't care. He's like, fuck it.
1300s.
1300s,
yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I
think that it just affected him to where it's like, I mean, can you imagine going to a cabin with all of us and you're the only one that left? And then the second time you get sucked down into the vortex, I don't know, man. I don't know how I would react. I mean, it's Ash. If it was anybody else, it would be like, oh, but because it's him, I don't think it's inappropriate. I mean, he already punched her in the face at table anyway before she was 100% a Deadite, so... The joke wasn't that bothered me. Her daughter bothers me the most because she's defending her at this point, going, no, she can get better after she just killed your dad.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I was wondering if they pull back on the acting because they're trying to walk this line of humor and horror at the same time. So maybe that's why the acting doesn't have this dramatic push that you would find more so, because I think they could have actually still had the same exact lines and made it more believable. But I don't know. I don't know.
The interesting thing about this scene to me was that he wasn't giving her a chance at all. Like, he wasn't believing for one second that she was okay and that she could be all right. Like,
yeah.
But like him in Evil Dead 2, he holds that ring that he had given to Linda, or that necklace rather that he had given to Linda, and it brings him back to reality and he doesn't get possessed again, you know, but he expected, I guess, to have an axe thrown at him. You remember the scene where he's like, "Are you listening to me?
I said
I was all right." But he's not giving her that chance. So maybe he knows it's different this time. Maybe he's just not willing to give her the chance.
He's just not patient, and he knows. I mean, how many times was he like, "Oh, okay," and then next thing you know, he's got his hand or something trying to kill him. You know, Ash doesn't want to take the chance anymore.
I don't blame him, though.
I have to point out, I know Army of Darkness has happened, but they're not able to reference it too much. But, I mean, Princess Insipid or whoever she was, she was a Deadeye and then ended up being human again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it happens, but I just don't think he has the patience. He's like, fuck it.
Maybe there's a rule here. She killed somebody, so if you kill somebody in Deadeye form, you don't get to come back regardless.
You can't come back. Could be.
I'm pretty sure she was killing some people in Army of Darkness, too. She was part of the battle.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Maybe we're looking too far into this.
We are.
So, anyway. So, he's...
Oh, and did you guys notice, is that a poster of Kelly in her own room, or is that somebody else? It looks a lot like her.
I didn't even notice. I'll have to go back and look.
It was a drawing that looked like it was a drawing or a painting that had been blown up to a pretty big size. And she doesn't live there anymore. So maybe it was something. All I can think of is something that she did for her parents after, you know, when she left.
An art project.
Like
maybe.
An art project. And then they put it up in her old
her room.
Maybe her creepy dad painted it to make it feel like she was there. I don't know.
So Ash pulls out the chainsaw and he takes a swing and a miss, and now he's stuck in the wall, which is not something. This is pretty cool. This is not something we've seen before, to where he can't get the chainsaw out of the situation. And instead of detaching his hand, we just kind of go from there and have it played out for its, you know, its intensity and its dramatic effect. And I thought that was pretty neat, though. You know, he's trying to shoot her with the shotgun while she's right above him, and then she puts it up under his chin and she's like, "Good night, Ashley." So they all know his name, even though they've been introduced before. There was a Deadeye in the first episode that knew who he was. So
exactly.
He must be like legendary among them or something, like the one that survived, the chosen one, I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, he's foiled their plans a couple times now, so I'm damn sure they know him.
So Pablo.
And he's the possessor of the book.
Right.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. They should be thanking him. Because without him, they would just remain asleep forever.
It's somewhat confusing.
They wouldn't be able to. Well, they get pissed off because they're awoken from their like supposedly eternal slumber. And then because they're woken up and they're crabby and pissed off, they start killing people and everything. But they seem to really, really like that. So, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Their agenda is chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah. So Pablo actually shows up and he stabs her right in the top of the head with the kitchen knife, which I thought was pretty badass. Even more badass is she just turns to look at him and pulls it out slowly. And
it was slimy too. It was fucking nasty.
That's intimidating. When you just put a knife in somebody's head like that and they just look at you as they're pulling it out, like you start to feel, okay, what can I do to hurt this thing?
Mm-hmm. Poor Pablo. He keeps striking out.
I know. He can't catch a goddamn break. Okay, so finally, you know, she's about to go carve up Pablo and her daughter, and then Ash finally gets the chainsaw working, and he doesn't go right for the headshot. We get a good gutting.
Oh, my gosh.
You
could just see all the soft tissue shaking with the vibrations of the chainsaw.
It was thoroughly disgusting, and like we said before, there's a ton of blood in this episode, and this was no exception. But I liked how after he got her in the stomach, she was pretty much dead. Everybody knows you have to decapitate a Deadeye before they're truly dead, and he kind of does it without ceremony. He doesn't haul back and do anything. He just lifts it right up to her head, just kind of like with almost, I guess, as close to surgical precision as you can with a big time power tool like that. Lops her head off.
Oh, yeah.
And then, then of course, Pablo, he has to
just get covered in blood.
Oh, man. Just drenched. It's like there's a hose just spraying him, a garden hose full of blood spraying at him. And he has to get in one more one liner. And he says, "Good night, mother," and throws her head. And there was another one, too, right? Like, right
about
right,
her cooking sucks.
Yeah, he said, "Your cooking was shit."
It's just, it's funny. I thought it was funny, man. I like the one-liners like "night, mother," and dumb shit like that. It cracks me up.
That, see, when I heard that this series was coming out, that was my number one fear, is that if it was handled wrong, they would just make a caricature out of certain elements of it and leave alone and not touch a bigger, more in-depth storyline. And they're not doing that. They're doing it right. But because these writers aren't exactly the same as Sam Raimi and the other creators, it's a shade off in certain places in this episode.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think it's going to correct itself. And I think once you add in more scenes with Fisher, more scenes with Ruby, and then other characters that are coming up and the deepening of the storyline, I think that's going to disappear. And even if it is there, we're not going to notice it because there's going to be so much else to take in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all three of them are standing by some a makeshift grave for the mom and dad. And this is where we kind of get the three coalesce as a unit and decide that they're going to go ahead and, you know, they even share a drink of bourbon, even though I don't think it was meant to be shared with Pablo. This was
took it from Kelly.
This was a bonding moment between Ash and Kelly because he's saying, look, I'm a lot like you, you know, or you're a lot like me when I was younger. Deadites ruin your life and you're super hot. So they share a drink and say, let's get together and fight this. And then Pablo takes a drink. He's like, yeah, me too. The second time I watched it, I looked at Kelly's face while he was doing that. And she was just kind of like, the fuck are you doing? Nobody, you know, she's just like, whatever. Which doesn't
both. Well, now she's got a reason, you know. What's his reason other than her?
Exactly. It is her is his reason, but he also wants to be around Ash. And so that's why he opportunizes or manipulates. He's like, see, you hate them as much as we do, so you need to join us and stay with us so we can fight these things together.
He's in love with both of them in his own way.
Right.
So he's kind of like the tag along at this point. But like we said earlier, I think he's also going to serve as the moral compass. And if M's prediction is true, he could probably be possibly like a conduit to the uncle.
Maybe.
Who's a shaman. If the actual uncle doesn't show up at some point as an actual character, we don't
know.
Well,
you think he would have the deadite sight too with an uncle shaman, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't. He definitely doesn't, because when Ash looked over toward him at the dinner table, Pablo wasn't seeing what he was seeing.
Yeah.
Or maybe Pablo doesn't want to see it, and that's why he can't.
Maybe. Maybe he's...
Because he sure enough wanted to see her as her mom.
That's true. He's blinded by her.
I don't know how they keep seeing all this stuff, like the finger and the hand and not saying anything, because...
Or reacting.
Oh, yeah. It would be like, what the fuck? There's a hand...
Oh my god. So the final gag of the episode is left to Kelly, who she says, you know my parents are Jewish, right? And he's like, no, I really didn't. You could have said that before I made these crosses. That would have been
funnier
if it hadn't been in the
preview,
the original preview that we saw. That was in the preview. Yeah, and see, it was funny in the preview, but at the end of this episode, you know it's coming. So it would have added a little bit of comic relief. So it's kind of a good study in, you know, editing and the way that people need to hold certain things back to make jokes work. The joke itself was good. It's just that we all knew it was coming. So,
yeah.
And then as the camera pulls back, the windmill begins to spin.
It's the winds of change.
And I wanted to bring that up because we cut. I'm gonna let you finish your recap. I don't want to take over, but we have Amanda go into the bookstore as was pointed by the hand, the dismembered hand. So does this mean that the Deadites win this? Have they claimed some territory? Did they win this episode?
See, I don't think that they did, because I don't think she's being directed by the Deadites. I think she has some kind of spiritual thing going on with her in her past, or something that's going on, and that's just her being directed to, like, her destiny, you know, like bringing her to the fore, kind of like she's the last piece of the group to be able to fight and take care of this. Because now when she joins, you got to think, at the beginning of this episode, we see Ash being hunted by the police, and she'll have a connection kind of to the police, to where maybe once her stuff gets cleared, maybe at the end of the season we'll get a big fight, and that'll be she'll bring the police in to help Ash and them fight like a large group of them. So I think it's just her being pushed into the group. You know what I mean? I don't think she's going to be evil.
Some other positive force is guiding her. Maybe played spin the bottle with the deadite hand.
Exactly. Because it's like you said in the last episode, we need a really strong female into the group. And I think she's going to be one to kind of maybe keep Ash's mouth in check and kind of help out getting them focused even more on getting the problem done. Because, you know, Ash is going to squirrel off at one point, you know.
I think it's going to be Lucy Lawless.
But. Yeah, I mean, we've got potentially three female characters that could be doing that. You know, and looked at...
Lucy will be our Hermione, for sure.
And looking at it purely from a plot device standpoint, having, you know, Agent Fisher be suspended from the force pending investigation, she can still have the resourcefulness and knowledge and investigative talents of a police officer, but when she first meets Ash, initially she's going to think he's a bad guy doing all this carnage. She won't be able to arrest him. She won't even really be able to call the other cops in because she's not supposed to be doing anything police related. So it'll allow her to get close to him and then figure out eventually that he's the good guy.
And with her police radio, she can hear when there's a sighting of like a deadite infestation. You know, like if there's a family in trouble, she'll be able to hear it on her walkie, and then they can go take care of it maybe before the cops get there.
And then she'll eventually...
Which would just look bad for Ash, because then everywhere he goes, he's decapitating people.
She'll eventually be back on the force, and she'll be his Murphy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's a good reference for someone who doesn't even like Jim Butcher. I like that.
That is, I like that too. So we'll see, and then who knows, maybe Ruby is wanting the Deadites to take over. I mean, that's a huge question. Those two characters alone are what I'm anticipating the most right now, is just to see what their background is, how they're going to fit into the mix, and then how it's all going to work out with the two.
Did you just suggest that Ruby wants the Deadites to take over?
Possibly. Who knows?
She's a wild card. I don't think that hadn't crossed my mind, but she's a wild card. We don't know what she's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, we have no idea. We mentioned some things in the spoiler section of last episode, so I'll keep it in that section till we know her last name. But she could be working any angle. We just don't know.
Yeah. We need Ash's Yang, like an Army of Darkness. You know, we need somebody working with the Deadites, I think.
Our Jane Fonda.
Yes, our Hanoi Jane.
So we need exercise tapes? What are we getting at here?
I did that exercise. I had the record, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
All politics aside, Jane Fonda in those leg warmers, totally hot. Hey.
Yeah, if you're into Jane Fonda.
Hey, it's all right, so we don't have a spoiler section for this episode.
We just have feedback.
Yeah, we just have some feedback.
So before we go into feedback, we're going to ask you guys to please go to our website at noship.net. Click on our support page, and you can look and see the various ways you can support us, or you can also hire us for a commission podcast. On the support page, it does direct you to how to write reviews, and you can take the time, do that. That helps us more than anything at this point, because we need to get people seeing that we're available. That's what directs traffic toward us, and that's the number one way you can help us right now.
Last week, I touched on a contest that, you know, we like to do every season on different shows, and this one's no different. You know, you're going to win either like a beer stein or a cup that I make that's kind of like dedicated to the show. If you go on our Twitter handle, at No Ship, you can see some of like the past winners. It's totally free. You're not paying anything. And then all you have to do, here's the points, like I promised last week. If you review us on iTunes, it's 50 points. If you retweet a tweet about the show, it's five. It's or about like us and like our podcast or whatever, you know, it's 5 points. Like us on our Facebook page, it's 50 points. Sharing us on Facebook is another 5. And feedback to our email at noship.net is 10 more points. So really, just by being involved and helping us out, it's kind of like our way of, you know, giving back to our listeners too. You know, it's just a little something from us.
All right. So it's time for feedback.
Okay, so before we get right into the feedback, I just want to mention that Alec Rader had wrote to us on Twitter saying that he bumped the pilot episode up to 9. So he's no longer the bad guy. And I told him he's not a bad guy. He just has discerning taste. But Alec, you should feel comforted. I'm probably the bad guy now. So, but he didn't write any feedback. So maybe because he agreed with me and didn't want to be a bad guy.
Well, Alec, we are glad that you enjoyed it as much as we did and that you're towing the party line now. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's a discussion. We like it when people don't like it.
Well, he had actually rewatched it and then bumped it up to a 9, so I should say that.
Oh, okay, awesome.
So now I'm going to read an email from Mike, Metal Mike, who would write to us from Penny Dreadful.
Oh, awesome.
And this was actually for the pilot, so he got this in late, so I told him we'd go ahead and read this.
Okay.
Hey, shippers. Firstly, I want to say what a great thing it is to be talking about new Evil Dead content. The only time I really get to talk about Evil Dead with people is when Burn Notice happens to pop up in conversations or I drop a Bubba Hotep reference out of nowhere. 90% of the time, people don't know who Bruce Campbell is or know of the Evil Dead franchise, so I think this show is helping a shitload for it to get somewhat mainstream. Yeah, I don't know anybody else who's watching this show besides us.
Yeah, Mike.
I keep pushing it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I agree with Mike. This is the only time that we get to talk about the Evil Dead. Like, Luckily, we've always had each other to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And when Em and I first met, she had seen them too. So, you know, we were able to talk about that as well. But it's like, it's people who know about this stuff are few and far between, which is crazy to me.
I hadn't seen Evil Dead 1, but I had seen the other two. Yeah.
Well, at least you had seen that, though, you know?
Exactly.
So Mike goes on to say, I love the episode. It was exactly what I was hoping for and exceeded expectations. It ran on Stars from 12:17 to 1 a.m. early Saturday morning. I didn't realize this until about 10 minutes too late. My first scene was the cops pulling up to the house, so I had no idea how the Deadites got out. I saw the tattoo on the wrist, and for the rest of the episode, I was thinking, was this a new way to identify the Deadites somehow? But it seems it was just to identify the girl from the flashback. Oh well, maybe it will show up again. There's a weird prediction for you. That the way they explained it, though, was pretty funny, too. It was a perfect Ash move.
I thought it was, I just got a vision of like a Deadite tattoo parlor, you know, like an old dirty Deadite tattooing some old dirty skin.
There's no autoclave in that place.
Yeah, it's on the window. Yeah. The window says no sterilization. Yeah. No, nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike says, I'm sure Em was as ecstatic as I was when Pablo mentioned Monday Night Raw, considering we established during season 2 of the Penny Dreadful cast that she is a huge wrestling fan. Ha ha. Yes.
Yeah, I think we've established on every podcast that we've done at some point that Em is not a wrestling fan.
Yeah, because it gets brought up.
And honestly,
over and over again.
I'm not that big of a wrestling fan either. I watched it a lot when I was a kid, like probably in the early to mid 80s. And then I'm kind of like vaguely peripherally aware of some of the wrestlers who are around
I watched
today.
It quite a bit in the 90s.
Yeah. Actually,
you know, the 90s, it kind of like spiked up a little bit.
Actually, in the 90s, you got me into the ECW stuff with Rob.
Oh, yeah, ECW.
Rob Van Dam and some of those other people and stuff like that. So I can't really, that's what I just said, it's not quite true. I did have a little bit of a resurgence then. And then remember, sometimes we'd go over to my dad's house and he'd be watching it like for hours.
We used to have to go to his dad's house every Sunday and sit on the couch and watch wrestling. And my eyes would just water. Just like, oh.
So I've gotten a lot of exposure to wrestling, but Em hates it with a fiery passion.
Secretly, she's got a Hulkamania t-shirt somewhere.
Yeah, she does.
And now look what you've done, Mike. You've brought up wrestling and they're talking about it. When Mike goes on to say, whenever I see antlers on the wall of a room, I'm instantly thinking of them as a death trap. Texas Chainsaw Massacre taught me as a child that if you have something like that hanging off a wall, someone who may or may not be wearing the skin of another person will use that to their advantage. Also, what a great terrifying scene when the two cops are facing each other after the partner is a Deadite. The sound and the depth of his voice saying to die. The way the light disappeared and his white eyes topped off by the laughing. That is some good damn TV right there. I'm getting this email in late, so I don't know if you're already doing this, but I think a favorite line each episode should be established by each individual shipper and listeners if they want to take part. It may be,
ooh, I like that.
It may be unanimous sometimes, but I think it would be fun. Just a thought. I may not send in this much feedback weekly, but I will at least give my favorite line, because there are going to be shitloads to choose from. Episode 1, quote goes to Vivian, the next door neighbor, with, "Stop fussing, Muffin. I just want to put these things through your eyes." That one cracked me up the most. I didn't realize she previously called Ash Muffin at the clothesline until my second watch, so it made the line even better. Until next time, take care, shippers. Mike from New Hampshire, out. Thanks, all Metal right. Mike.
Mike.
Glad you're back with us again for another show.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got a couple of things to say to Metal Mike. He brought up Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and unfortunately, Gunnar Hansen, the gentleman who played Leatherface in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, passed away earlier this week from pancreatic cancer. So that's a sad note. But on a better note, Em and I just got back from a vacation in Rhode Island, and we got to see a band called Maiden New England. Mm-hmm. YouTube it. It's an Iron Maiden cover band with a female singer, and you will love it, I promise.
Yeah, and they seem to tour up in that area, so you'll probably get to see them.
Yeah, like the name implies, Maiden New England. And so, you know, we saw them in Rhode Island, so it's just a hop, skip, and a jump away to New Hampshire. They might play in, like, I don't know, Concord or something, Portsmouth maybe, who knows?
I like his idea of your favorite line of the week, because there does seem to be a lot of funny-ass one-liners. I would be up for that if you guys are.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Let's do it. My vote this week goes to, sometimes he brings whores to his trailer.
That's a good one.
Because we can't give every one of them to Ash, because it's going to be too obvious. Unless he just has one that's a total slam dunk and you can't avoid it.
He's got so many good ones, too. He does. Though.
That's true.
Because I did like the inappropriate one about the dad. I mean, it.
Go ahead and claim it.
Because it was inappropriate, I think it made it even more of like a, oh, shit, you know, cross the line. And
you know, as to that, it was inappropriate because you're hurting Kelly's feelings, but I don't think he was talking about her dad necessarily. No. He was talking about him as the daddy.
Daddy. Yeah,
exactly.
Makes it a little bit better.
Like, I didn't excuse you.
Because then when he throws her head, he talks about mommy, you know, like, it's all right. Either way, I think it's fucking genius.
He covers all the bases there, but you know, Ash is not a person that you're ever going to get to make feel sorry about hurting somebody's feelings. Period.
Yeah, but good job, Mike, though. I think this is a great little segment we can do every week. We'll just have to slide it in somewhere and then have our listeners add in, too. I think it's fucking awesome.
Okay, so in honor of you and your letter, we are going to call it, we are going to do your idea, and we are going to call it the Metal Mike Quote of the Week. For everybody who's listening who wants to write in some feedback, write in some feedback and give us your quote, and we'll read all of them every week.
Yeah, they could always send their quotes to us on Twitter. I mean, you don't have to do the whole email. There's different ways you can contact us.
Yeah.
Or even just metal quotes of the week. That's not bad, too.
If there is metal quotes in the show.
Yes.
Yes. Either yes. Way. That.
Okay. Moving on. Now we've got one of our listeners from our Sparkwood and 21 podcast, or he's writing in now to Ash versus Evil Dead.
And I am assuming that he's writing from work. I'm just going out on a limb here.
Let me see. Oh, no. It doesn't look like it. We didn't get the...
Well, it's sent from his iPhone, though. He's probably on lunch break.
He could be surreptitiously, like, under his desk writing on his iPhone.
Possible.
Yes. This is from John Bernardi. And he says, "Hi, Em and Steve. Good to make your acquaintance, Paul. So I got called out last episode for choosing sleep over watching the show. I defend myself by saying this. I have two toddlers at home. I pray for sleep and sometimes find it. After kids, you figure out how much of a luxury TV really is." Yes, I'm so sorry, John Bernardi. I'm so sorry that I called you out.
Yeah, we read that and we just immediately felt bad about it, because I think we gave you a little static last time for choosing sleep, but we don't have kids, so we don't
know
what that's like.
We don't think about it,
but from what I understand, Paul doesn't have kids either, and from what I understand, you don't get a whole lot of sleep until they reach a certain age, so I would probably choose, knowing how I am, I take naps all the time, so I would choose sleep at any given
time. I don't feel
time.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Let's just get that correct.
Paul's on record, he doesn't
sacrifice.
Feel sorry.
It's all about sacrifice.
So John goes on to say, and here's where I make probably the only connection ever between Ash and classical music. The louds are loud and the quiets are quiet. With sleeping boys in the next room, I needed to be on it with the remote. I'm barely able to hear the talking sometimes because I just know some deadeye is going to burst in with some serious noise, and I love it. Dynamics are hardly ever in television or music anymore, so I really respect a show that can make conversations one level and the ruckus as disrupting as it would be in real life. Huh. So
that's a cool comparison. That's awesome.
I guess maybe you have to be worried about sound level in order to pick up on that at some point, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because I didn't realize that.
You probably start to notice it because you fall into a rhythm of turning the volume up and then down and then up and then down, and you feel like a conductor to a classical music suite. That's a really good point, though, because there is some dynamics to this. It's horror, so there has to be some dynamics if it's going to be done right.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, the only connection I have with the franchise before this is watching Army of Darkness back in 2001. Highly quotable and a lot of fun, but was part of a large batch of movies my roommate was getting me into while I was introducing him to Twin Peaks. Oh, and my wife and I also went to Evil Dead, the musical, which is essentially Evil Dead's 1 and 2 in a play form. Lots of songs. A memorable one has the moose head on the wall singing lead. The first two rows had plastic around them and enormous bibs for the people in those seats. I recommend you looking it up to see if it's playing anywhere near you. My wife and I got a kick out of it. What?
Holy shit.
I know, right? I would totally go to an Evil Dead fucking play.
It would never play around here.
I would pay a lot of money to see that. I'm jealous. Mm. That's awesome.
I would travel to go see it.
Yeah, I would travel, but it would not play here because I went to Sweeney Todd with Paul's wife and they didn't have blood. They used red fabric. This place is really conservative.
Somebody call the Whambulance. People are going to be afraid of blood.
So John goes on to say, the S-Mart Value Stop name change thing doesn't bug me. We used to have Venture. Now we have Target. Whatever. What did give me a full stop was this. The supervisor's name is Mr. Roper. Norman Fell played a Mr. Roper on Three's Company, one of the landlords. That's hysterical if there's supposed to be a connection. Also hysterical to possibly me and my wife only. You brought up a connection to the past and Scotland, which made me connect some dots. Since Ash is on Stars and Outlander is a powerhouse already on Stars, wouldn't that be an interesting crossover? I kid, but that would be, I would lose my shit watching the two styles collide in the cross promotion.
You're going to have to talk to Bib about that.
I know, we've been told before to check it out, so that's two now, so maybe it's just time.
We actually owe a watch of that.
Yeah,
so we're going to have to do it. Okay. He says, I love how the Doom is following Ash. Simple things almost in the background, like the sinkhole on the news from the bar where he had the fling with his first Deadeye message delivery lady, etc. I like how details are quickly and organically dropped in, like Pablo's uncle being connected to the mythology. Kelly wasn't really included into it in the first episode, but her struggle for episode 2 was introduced with the FaceTime. Nice, simple touches. It also reminds me of reading one-and-done comics like they used to be in the 80s or sometimes the 90s. The first episode introduces a team. The second episode starts with Kelly running off and ends with her believing in the cause and joining the team. There's an objective at the beginning that is solved and tied up by the end, while dropping plenty of extra details you know are for later. No moment is wasted, and you really feel a sense of accomplishment at the end of every episode. Great sense of economy. I expect all 10 will be like this. Can't wait to see how the undercurrent of mythology will bubble up to the surface and snowball right over Ash and the team. That's a great way to summarize this episode, actually, to make it...
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it, is to say they're being economical with the storytelling, right, and they're using every little bit. So that kind of redeems it a little bit for people who felt like M did, and a little bit like I did. Like I said, I gave it, you know, it wasn't as highly rated as the last episode, but it's still up there. And it's using economy, which a lot of storytellers don't really employ anymore, especially if they don't have to.
No, I mean, a lot of shows seem to be at a very slow pace nowadays. So it's nice to see one that's just like bang, 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 just dishing it.
It's like going from Robert Jordan to Brandon Sanderson.
Exactly.
Whoa. That's, yeah.
So he goes on to say, I know Amanda will figure more into this, but I'd love to know why she's seeing Deadites now while not yet knowing Ash, because everyone else has a connection to him, however tenuous. Just because she meets the fling of Ashes who read the Book of the Dead like a poetry book doesn't seem like enough reason to be seeing Deadites and little kids at a restaurant. I love how in episode 2, Ash is absolutely solidified as Pablo's mentor. And I love how Pablo and Kelly both have a ton of agency. Neither one of them lets themselves become a damsel in need of being rescued. Really, no one on this show is born a victim. This is so refreshing. That's all I have time for. I'm enjoying the show, and I'm enjoying your podcast as usual. You guys bring it no matter what show you're covering. Take care, John. Thanks, John. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, John. I'm really psyched that somebody from Sparkwood in 21 came over, and I'm glad that it was you.
Yes, and I'm sorry again.
Yeah, sorry about the whole kids thing. Get some sleep, man.
Okay.
Sacrifice.
Get some earmuffs. Put them on the kids.
Yeah.
That's right. Headphones.
Or let them watch, you know? I mean, my dad let me watch stuff like that at a really early age, and you see how I turned out, so...
Paul and I were raised differently.
Yes. Very.
Yes.
And look at you, deviants.
That's true, though.
I'm a normal, functioning member of society.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
We both Paul and I end up being problem children as a result.
That's true. When you break bad.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So, next up, Anthony. Anthony wrote into our last podcast, and he's writing again. He says, "Hey, everyone, yet another great episode this week. That first quick cut to Mr. Roper Deadeye in the car must have made me jump about 5 feet."
I know, me too. I didn't see him at the beginning, so I must have just I'm going to have to watch it again, which would be a third time. I totally just missed it. I don't know what I was doing. So it made me jump.
That's almost as high of a jump from the time when I first saw the dumpster creature Mulholland Drive.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why this Winkies? That's anyway, go ahead.
Besides that, my favorite moment in Bait was the dinner scene. The tension in that scene was so well done, and the pacing perfectly led up to Ash punching the mother Deadeye off her chair. Kudos to director Michael J. Bassett and director Dominic Dierkes for some stellar work on this episode. I cannot wait to go out and start using the line, young, dumb, and full of conflicting emotions.
That's one we didn't touch on, but that's a slight variation on what's usually said in place of...
Spunk?
Yes, spunk, yeah.
Yeah, so we've got Anthony's favorite line here.
I know, right? Already doing the medalist quotes of the week.
Metal Mike's quote. Anthony goes on to say, from last week's podcast, there was talk about how plausible it is for Ash to be working at Value Stop now as opposed to S-Mart. I think that's one of the most realistic things about this show. How many chain stores that existed 20 or 30 years ago no longer exist in 2015? When I was in college, I worked at Tower Records, which has been out of business now for almost 10 years. If I were to be an Ash-like character, I would probably be working at this best present-day equivalent to Tower, which I think might be Best Buy. So I think it makes perfect sense for Ash to be working at Value Stop 20 years after working at S-Mart. And finally, what is the theme music you're using for this podcast? I love it. It really captures the mood and feeling of the show. Perfect choice. Anthony.
Well, we came up with that ourselves on our Casio. Yeah. No, just kidding. I'll let M handle this one.
Well, the music, I always get our music from Pond 5 because we don't want to be sued for anything.
If you don't know, Pond 5 is a really cool website where you can get, probably among other things, but you can get songs on there that are images and songs, and they're made by other people, and you pay for them a one-time fee, and then you can use it as much as you want to.
And the name the name of it is 8-Bit Halloween, and it usually takes me a while to pick a song because I like to...
God, there's so many on there, too. Yeah.
And you want the perfect one. You know, there's you sit there and listen to all the different samples. And not only am I trying to capture the feel of the show, but I'm also trying to set the mood of our podcast. So I try to find something that straddles both of those things. And
she is excellent at doing this. I think I've had input on one of them, maybe, to where I was you narrowed it down to like two or three and said, which one do you like the most? And I picked that one, I think. I can't even remember which one it was now. Was it Penny Dreadful?
Yeah, I think it was Penny Dreadful because that one was so expensive. So we had to agree on that.
Go to www.pond5, that's P-O-N-D, the number 5.com, and then it's 8-Bit Halloween.
Yep. So we got a final piece of feedback from Kane Shoddy Gray, and he wrote this into Twitter.
Castle Grayskull. All right.
Castle Grayskull. Got our first nickname right on.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and read what he said. He said, "What can I say? Another solid episode. If the first episode was a 9.5, I'd give this an 8.5. The action was great between the mom and Ash, and the finishing maneuver was gory as hell. Thought that the dad might have come back as a deadite as well. Notice the cheeky nod to the Joker they slipped in there with a magic trick disappearing fork in the eye made me chuckle."
Heath, oh yeah, Heath like he Ledger. Says with the pencil.
Yeah.
Well, if Batman. You notice, if you know, well, I'm not sure about the whole Batman stuff, but
it was in that one with Heath Ledger. Yeah, yeah. Has it right.
Okay, all right. I noticed
he's like, "Let me show you a magic trick," and he's talking to all the mob bosses, and he's like,
and he balances just the pencil,
slams him.
I thought the CGI was at a minimum this week and not so obvious. Wondering where the police lady is going to fit in this story. There's also something very shifty with Pablo. I'm hoping he doesn't turn into a bad guy later on in the series and it's him pulling all the strings. Here's a link to episode 3 promo. That's all I have to say right now. Keep up the great podcast, guys. Look forward to next week's show.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Darth Pablo. That's a good idea. That's, I didn't even think about that.
Yes,
I like it.
Darth he's
Pablo.
Reading him as shifty.
Hmm.
I could see that.
You see that? Really?
Well, the manipulation.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he's going to turn dark. I think it's, you know, that's just his survival mode, as you guys have already, whoever said it mm-hmm. earlier.
I'm not reading it that way. I was the one who said that's his survival mechanism. And the reason why I think so is because in the scene in the Streamline trailer before they go in to eat dinner at Kelly's house or Kelly's parents' house, he pulls the book out, puts it back in again, and you can tell he doesn't want to say what he has to say. He feels bad about it. He deceived mm-hmm. Ash, and he feels like a shit heel about it.
Yeah.
So I don't think that he's manipulative in a bad way. I think, once again, it's a survival mechanism, and that's just how he has to live, because he's not this like super good-looking guy who can just move people with his confidence and his stature and things like. People don't respond to him the way that they would respond to yeah. other people. So. Or even to,
well, I don't want,
even to Ash.
I don't want, yeah, I agree. I don't want Kramer Jr. to be bad either.
Yeah.
I don't think he is. I think he has the moral compass. He's directing people. Mm. However he does it is how he does it. Could be, you know, not exactly. not necessarily on the up and up every time, but, you know, he's leading everybody in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. But it's always cool because we always get somebody who writes in with a little bit of a theory that's from left field, you know?
Oh, I love it.
And it just makes you think. It makes you kind of like scratch your head and question it.
Yeah.
And go, could that be the case? And Castle Grayskull did it for this episode. So
mm-hmm.
thank you. And thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I mean, I don't have anything to do with the show, but I mean, the more eyes that are on screens, the better.
Yeah, the more we can get more seasons. Granted, we've got season 2 already, but, you know, the more that's out there, the better. And is that the last of the feedback?
That's the last of the feedback.
All right, so I've taken notes now. We know, you know, you guys that have all written in are ahead of the game. So don't forget, you know, you can always put in some feedback on iTunes and just get that advantage in the contest.
Yeah, we've gotten some stars recently, but we don't, you know, if you go in and just click stars, we can't tell who did it. So if you write something...
Even if it's just awesome job or I hate your guts, I'm going to kill you. Whatever you put
Stop
in there,
it.
At least
no.
we'll be
None
able
of
to
that.
Fill it in.
I know that some people are a little bit, they just want to say, hey, good job, five stars, and we appreciate that. We definitely do. But if you want to be part of the contest, or if you just want to say something that'll like let other people know why you gave us a 5-star review,
yeah,
please do.
So anything else, you guys, before we cut out?
Just all in all, I thought this was a really great episode, a notch below the first one, but still head and shoulders above all the other TV that's going on right now, and I'm really looking forward to next week.
And
awesome, me too.
Yep, and I feel like I like the show a little bit better after talking to you guys and reading feedback, so thank you everyone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Not that I hated it, but, you know, I did need a little boost, and thanks.
All right.
Awesome.
We're going to sign off. We will see you next time.
All right.
I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Em.
And I'm your host, Paul.
Sleep tight. Don't let the deadites bite.